To Tales from the Fog. I'm your host, Casey, and with me, as always, is the amazing and wonderful ninja warrior, Veronica. How are you doing?
Hi! I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
All right.
Yeah, things are going. Halloween's coming up fast. Amazing things coming up.
Yeah.
But first, I want to talk about your second ninja warrior competition.
You do?
Yeah.
Let's start off with that. We were talking before about this regional ninja warrior competition thing that's happening around the country, and we talked about the obstacles that existed and all that fun stuff and kind of gave an overview of the structure of the thing. So this was more of the same. It was week 3 of 5, I think. There were 5 total comps in the regionals, and this was the third one. It was the second one for me. So, same deal. We all piled in the car, drove out to San Dimas. It was open gym for the first hour, and then competition started, and we got to watch the young adults and it was like the older teens and then the young adults, and then, of which there was one, and then the pro division, which was basically just ages 18 through 39.
Yeah, but there was one girl that was on American Ninja Warrior this year, right?
She's on the show.
She's on the show this year.
And I think, is she in the Dallas one? Is she in the one that premieres on the 30th?
I think that's what they said, is she's in the Dallas.
That's what I heard as well. One. I guess she had the bottle, and I wasn't sure who was the one on the show, but yeah. I looked over and I saw like a real, like, you know, the swag bags that you get from things. Hers was like an official American Ninja Warrior 2018 bottle, and I was like, oh! That's so cool.
And then also the owner of the gym, what's his name? Arnold.
Hey, Arnold.
I knew it was an A.
Yeah.
He was there too, which I think he's on the show this year as well.
Is he?
I think so.
I hadn't heard, but I'm not. I mean, I listen to, shout out to Armchair Ninja Podcast, but I don't actively listen and like write stuff down. Yeah. So I forget a lot. But also, they're not talking about the show yet because it hasn't aired yet. So yeah. But I hope he is because he's super talented and is awesome and should totally be on the show.
And I think that's probably why the reason why this past weekend's competition was so tough. Like some of the obstacles that they threw in there were just like, holy crap.
They were a step up from last week. I mean, this is the first time that this gym has done a regional competition. Actually, this is the first time that gym has done any competition. I don't think they did National Ninja League last year because I think they had opened
in like January or late last year, like early November,
or December. So they weren't even open when that comp happened.
Mm-hmm. So this is the first official competitions that they're doing.
Yeah. And it works for them because regionals take themselves less seriously. They don't have to be as concerned about the difficulty really. It's kind of like a touch and go for them.
Yeah.
And it works out well for us because we get different experiences. So last time was, I mean, admittedly, pretty easy. I'm a noob, so it was challenging for me. But as far as your typical training ninja goes, easy peasy. We had plenty of people do all 10 obstacles, no problem. This time, however,
We had zero
completions. Not a single person finished the final obstacle. And that was tricky because I kind of wonder if, like, maybe Lance Pekus could have finished that last obstacle. Maybe, like, what's his name? Real Life Ninja, our cousin from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Kid could have probably done it, but I mean, it was really hard.
Arnold and the kid tested it. I saw them test it and they both were able to do it, but they also hadn't done 9 obstacles before that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know that they take all that stuff into account. And another thing that happened on this course, which might be an official rule, it may just be a common courtesy or, you know, failure to observe such common courtesy, but there was an obstacle that was piggybacked onto another obstacle. And if you were in a National Ninja League or on the show, the idea is that you have to daisy chain the obstacles. You can't fail one and then move on to the next one. Yeah. However, regionals are set up so that you can fail an obstacle but continue on to the next obstacle. The way that this course was set up is there was a salmon ladder. From the salmon ladder strung that 10th obstacle. So from that salmon ladder, you had to go on to a, what was it, the something bridge, the swinging bridge, the rocking bridge, whatever, into...
Flyboard?
Is it a flyboard? Yes. I know my ninja obstacles. So... You had to go from the salmon ladder at the top to the flyboard, and then lache to the nunchucks, and then lache from the nunchucks to the other side to pass this line to mark it as course complete.
You could swing from the nunchucks. There was a ball that would then help you get past the bat.
Oh, I never even saw the ball.
Yeah.
Probably because no one ever got that far.
Nope.
So with regional, the spirit is for you to get to attempt all 10 obstacles if you want. The way that this course was structured is... you were not able to test or attempt all 10 obstacles because the flyboard was directly linked to the salmon ladder. Now, if that flyboard series had been part of one obstacle, like if the salmon ladder to the flyboard, to the nunchucks, to the ball, to the floor was one obstacle, albeit a nightmare, then that's kind of fair. But because not like I had a chance on any of them anyway, but others may have. And if they couldn't do the salmon ladder, which was obstacle 9, they were immediately DQ'd from obstacle 10,
yeah.
Which in my opinion wasn't entirely fair. So
I'm pretty sure it's against the rules.
Well, we'd have to look.
But yeah.
But I mean, the spirit of this comp, it's supposed to be light and friendly and, you know, all access and kind of thing. And I super understand having an obstacle be as difficult as on the show. However... being denied a shot at an obstacle because of another obstacle, I thought was unfair. And I know some others noticed it as well, and the owner noticed it. But at the time, all of the safety equipment that would have been put in place to eliminate that problem were being used in other parts of the course. He could not safely get an athlete to skip the salmon ladder to do this 10th obstacle. So he was kind of stuck. He, like, the entire course was laid out already.
Yeah.
He didn't have a choice. It was too late.
Well, what they could have done was done an optional 10th. So if you do the salmon ladder, you're committing yourself to this other one, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you skip the salmon ladder, you can then do this other optional 10th.
They could have done the cliffhanger on the other side. I mean...
yeah, there's a lot of things they could have done.
Yeah.
And they could have given you an option.
Yeah.
But
again, who knows if that's in the rules?
Yeah.
To have that option. It's still kind of green. And I'm sure it's documented somewhere.
This is the first year they're doing this kind of thing, right? With the
I think this is the fourth year that regionals have existed. It's the first year that regionals have existed in the Southwest region.
Oh, okay.
To the best of my knowledge.
Yeah.
So, you know, that being what it was, I still can't do the salmon ladder, so it didn't really matter. I probably couldn't have done the flyboard either.
Although you also broke a piece of the salmon ladder, and you got really close to doing one rep. So
I did. Cool. Well, I've been looking at the salmon ladder. We've been there 3 or 4 times now. A chunk flies off almost every time, and I think that he replaces those feet like once a week.
Makes me wonder why they don't put a topper on those wood pieces.
A topper? What do you mean?
Like, you can get a thin piece of, like, strap metal or even, like, those things that we're putting on that prop and screw it down. And that way, when it comes, you're not landing straight on the wood, splintering it. You have a piece that's distributing the weight over more of the board.
There have been some interesting takes on the salmon ladder because there's things that have to be a certain way. They have to be a foot apart. They have to be a certain distance from each other. And the bar has to be at least a certain thickness or something like that. Yeah. There are some things that are strict. However, I have seen different iterations within those parameters. Mm-hmm. Like you have just a piece of, call it 3/4 inch conduit pipe. That would be your bar. And I've seen gyms wrap the edges of that, like maybe the last foot on either side, in either in some sort of grip tape or a rubber guard of some kind, and then it kind of protects the feet of the salmon ladder itself.
Mm-hmm.
It changes the dynamic of the obstacle, apparently.
Because it'll make it a little slippery. Like, well, if you depends. Use the metal or the other thing, it, when you go to land it, it's going to be
it would be more slippery. You're but not if have you the grip did,
you have on wood.
Yeah, but it'd be the opposite if you used grip tape or that rubber.
Yeah, they have more
I think
grip.
They used you know the tennis rackets, like the wrap that they put on the tennis rackets. Yeah. I think they used that.
But and the reason why I say use metal is because in American Ninja Warrior, their salmon ladder is made out of box steel.
It is.
Yeah, it's not wood. So that's why when you hear a clink, it like
really, yeah, it really clinks.
Clink noise. It's box steel.
Yeah, so I mean, it wouldn't change. I don't think it would change the way that one learns the salmon ladder. I think that it may come down to little twinges of technique as you go. But yeah. So this time around, they had the same obstacle number one, which was the I call it the – it was like a J curve. It looked like a high jump approach, but from the left side on these little 45-degree angled sliced boxes. And you kind of go around in a little quarter circle, and you go up on this piece of wood, and you grab on the rope, and you Tarzan swing across a little bit of thing, and you have to land on a little pad. And easier said than done. Depending on where you land and where your feet are, you can go all over the place. And yep. You could be on that rope for a long time. And but if you get it just right, some people just went whoop, 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 and landed and carried on with life. From there, it was a little bit of a balance obstacle. That was a little bit of balance beam, a little bit of monkey bar jumping, just very simple. You're not high off the ground. You just couldn't touch the lava on the floor, basically. Third obstacle was the cat traverse across the, there's like a, I don't know, like a railing or a, there's a path that you can take to get up to the platform where the trampoline is tucked into. This little wooden ledge is against the ramp that takes you up there. So again, not very high off the ground. You just have to hold on with like the underside of your fingers and your palm hugging the corner of this wooden 90-degree angle, and you just kind of scoot your way across as quickly as possible. You super need grippy shoes for this one because I finally have the strength to do it, but my shoes failed me, and I slipped right off the thing. But I saw nobody else having that problem, and it was because I was wearing the wrong shoes. More on that later. So from there, this was a linked obstacle to a set of, you know, the gymnast rings, like the big wooden circle rings.
Yeah.
And you had to hang on to those and kind of pull your weight onto one and then fling the rope that the ring was attached to the other side of the bar and then put your weight onto that one and then fling the other one back. And you just had to kind of scoot your way on the rings across the bar to the other side and then plop down on the floor on the other side of a piece of tape on the other side. Easy peasy. So that was one. The fourth obstacle was it was a little bit of a combination of obstacles where you have the ball grip, the cannonball, you slide down this rope or this pole, and then from there you go to a trapeze and then you go to another ball and then you fly across and then there's another balance obstacle after that. And then was the evil warped wall where I'm not sure what I did, but I may have either broken or really, really bruised my heel. And that sucked. And then there was the what came after that?
Oh,
the cargo netting, and then a pegboard obstacle, and then the evil salmon ladder, and then the flyboard after that. So super challenging for little old me, but a super lot of fun. And this time I leveled up. I got 5 obstacles, whereas last time I got 4. So now I'm at 9. And the other girl from the first week came back, so she completed 5 also. So she is at 12. And then the ninja that came to visit that day completed 9 out of the 10 obstacles on the course, so she and I are tied. So I'm still in the running to go to National Ninja League, provided that no other women show up for the rest of the competition. And, yeah, that's it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else is going on? The Cade Brigade had our open slide night.
That was incredible.
Yeah, it was super good.
Mm-hmm. Huge turnout.
58 people total,
but wow,
about
really?
48 were sliding.
Oh my goodness. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had a good time. We got to do a bunch of stuff.
It was basically just a big old sliding party. We had people from all different groups, different experience levels, different goals in their sliding. And it was a kind of a little bit of a family reunion, too. We had some vets come out and say hi and show their love. And we had some people that we had never seen before come out and throw down, and they did great. And it was just a lot of fun to have a community night of sliding and boundary pushing and some record setting and some record breaking. Yeah, we had
four people hit 10 feet for the first time, including Veronica, which is awesome.
It was fun.
And we did a lot of fun, kind of interesting games, like sliding games, kind of. Practicing a lot of body control and awareness of where you are in space kind of stuff.
Yeah, we kind of forced them to think past just jumping over a thing. You know, using balance in a way that they may not have considered before. So it was fun to watch the kids take that challenge and then add to it and step it up. And some people really stepped it up and tried things that they had never even considered. Like, why would you want to do that? I'm like, oh, because it looks really cool. That's why.
Yeah.
So yeah, huge success with the slide night. And I hope that we can make it an annual thing where it's just a big ass party.
I hope so too. You know,
I wanted to do something a little bit more, like add some layers to it, like have like a rummage sale of sliding stuff or have food there and drinks there. But at a certain point, it becomes a circus and I didn't want it to be too crazy on its inaugural
year. Yeah, well, maybe we'll build it up to something.
Yeah, we'll make it a thing.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Be fun to have like a food and maybe some merch and stuff for sale, just like, because I mean we have a bunch of backlog stuff, so why not have kind of like a clear out sale before the convention start up?
Yeah, and why not? And I would even open that to the other groups that are there. I mean, if Queen Mary has merch, set it up, sell it. Like, you need to offload and get some money to start building your inventory for this year, so why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Your market is right there. Everyone who buys your crap is right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a huge success.
Yeah, it was very cool. Let's see. Speaking about conventions, Midsummer Scream announced the Epic Home Haunt panel, and it's in conjunction with the Epic Home Haunt documentary that's coming out. I don't know if you watched the trailer that they just released.
I did not.
So I believe it's called Saga Productions, is doing a documentary called Epic Home Haunts, and it's actually all Southern California based. So they're going to go to Boot Hill is one of them that they spent like 3 years documenting each build season of each haunt and all that stuff. They do interviews with a bunch of people. But they're covering Boot Hill, Beware the Dark Realm, Restless Souls Manor, and Rotten Apple 907.
Okay.
All amazing haunted houses. And then recently, I think as they're getting closer, you know, they got all their home haunt footage. They've been interviewing industry vets. So Rick West, John Cook, Ted Doherty, people that are in the industry are starting to get their interviews done so they can piece it all together and have the documentary ready to go. But they're actually doing an Epic Home Haunts panel. So I don't know exactly if what it's going to consist, if they're going to bring on some of the home haunters as well as the people doing the documentary, or if it's just going to be about the making of the documentary, but, sounds cool.
Probably a little bit of not a preview, but maybe, you know, drawing from the documentary so that people will be interested in buying the documentary.
Yeah. Maybe they'll show a cool, like, extended trailer. That'd be neat.
Yeah. Good opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Get in the creator of Midsummer Scream, or one of the creators of Midsummer Scream, who's in the movie, should probably be on that panel.
Maybe he's moderator. He moderates. So maybe that's one of the ones he's moderating.
Oh, that'd be neat. That'd be very appropriate.
Yeah. Especially since Rick is a huge home haunt fan and, you know, champion of.
You can tell by the way that they are putting together the spooky section.
The spooky section? Called? The Hall of Shadows. Hall of Shadows. I like spooky section better. Maybe we should get him to change it.
It's the spooky zone. Ooh. Good news. Any other news on the Midsummer Scream front?
No, not too much else has come out. I don't remember if we talked about it. We may have in a previous podcast, but they're also doing a panel with the creators and the production teams that have started doing the haunted attractions and themed entertainment attractions for movies. So like the It House.
Oh.
The one that they did for the re-release of the classic horror movies.
Yeah.
Ready Player One attraction. Like the team that, you know, the production companies that are putting those on.
Uh-huh.
They have a panel with those people talking about how the movie industry is now embracing these live environment things as a marketing opportunity.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be a really cool one to go check out.
Definitely. I've been curious about that since I first heard about these events just popping up and then disappearing.
Yeah, they're only there for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then they're gone. It's like...
But it's perfect. I mean, yeah. It's like a haunt. It's only there for a couple of weeks typically, mm-hmm. and then it disappears. But that serves such a huge marketing service.
Yeah.
To the studios and to the filmmakers that... I wonder, that's got to be good money.
I think right? It is too, yeah. I mean, it has to be. And the amount of marketing, I think, that they get out of it, because it's like they can put commercials out. They can do, you know, YouTube commercials. They can put their trailer out on YouTube, Facebook, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to get news agencies to report on, like, a movie coming out. But when you have something like The It House landing in the middle of Hollywood, and you, like, almost every day I was seeing like things on Facebook of like NBC, ABC, CBS, like reporting from the corner of the street there with The It House behind them. They would have like never gotten that coverage.
No way.
With anything else.
No. And like the results, like the proof is in the pudding, because Ready Player One is like the number four grossing movie in the box office. Like, it yeah. did so freaking well.
And I think it was a movie that I don't think a huge portion of the population read the book or knew the source material. So I think it was one that they did have to find a unique way to market it.
Yeah. It must have worked. Either that or they were genius about when they dropped it into theaters.
Yeah, between all the Star Warses and the Marvels and the DCs. Yeah.
But I mean, it did great.
Yeah, it did really good. Let's see what else is going on in... Well, we can talk about movies. How about a movie?
Ooh.
Zombieland 2 with the original cast is scheduling their release date for 2019.
Have they started production yet?
Oh, well, 2019 they have to have already.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Neat.
I'm sure either they've already started filming or going to start filming very, very soon.
I don't know how long movies take these days.
My guess is it'll probably be October-ish, 2019, so they have a year and a half. But if, you know, so if they're filming now, that'll give them like a year to edit.
That was such a great film. So what's the premise? Are they picking up where they left off?
They're keeping it quiet. There's not much known about it. All that's known is the original cast is coming back.
Okay. That was a great cast.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I imagine it's not too far in the distance, in the future, or the past of the event. So probably around the same time frame?
Yeah.
Maybe it goes Walking Dead, where they like meet other groups and other survivors and things like that.
Well, they did last time too, right?
Well, they ran into each other.
Well, and other people that were alive and crazy. Like, they killed Bill Murray.
Yeah. Spoilers. Jeez.
By the way, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie that came out a million years ago.
Also, if you're listening to a podcast called Tales from the Fog and you haven't seen Zombieland, shame on you.
You deserve to have it spoiled.
We don't want to shame anybody. Just go watch that movie. We apologize.
And Bill Murray does not die, okay?
Well, you don't have to lie to him.
Spoilers.
You did it first. Doesn't count.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, 2019, I'm excited. Should be fun.
Yeah.
I think it's the original writers, original director, so it should be, I guess, exactly like the first one.
Yeah, I tend to not be super excited about, you know, reboots, remakes, and sequels. However, I loved Zombieland, and I'd be pretty okay with seeing another one.
Yeah.
Even if it just carries on exactly where it left off.
So when we left off, weren't they trying to get the... Well, I guess they made it to California, right?
Yeah, they were trying to get to that.
But it wasn't really safe.
It wasn't as safe as they thought. They were trying to get to the theme park because they thought the theme park was like the perfect place to be and was safe. And, you know, nothing is what you think it's going to be.
Yeah. So was there anything at the end that led you to what might have come back? It's been so long since I've seen it. I can't remember the actual, like, if there was anything that hinted at where they might be going.
There might have been an Easter egg in there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Possibly. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited to see it. I love Zombieland, so.
Me too. What else you got in movies?
Well, how about a movie that we also love becoming a maze at Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights?
I'm listening.
Trick or Treat.
Yay!
Finally, after years and years and years of fans asking for a Trick or Treat maze, they are finally doing a Trick or Treat maze. They're going to do it on both coasts.
Cool.
Which means they'll be completely different, and both coasts will say that they have the better one.
Of course, because they always do. What the hell took them so long? They just didn't have any other IP to exploit this year, so they finally did that one?
I don't, maybe that is. Maybe they're like, oh, we don't have a whole lot of interesting stuff, so let's do Trick or Treat, because that'll at least get people in the gate.
It will. Or maybe, I mean, you never know why they do those things. Could have been totally intentional, just to keep them asking, keep them wanting, and then drop something that they've been asking for forever. Yeah.
Well, also, isn't there a Trick or Treat sequel in the works? So it could be a way to also kind of get it back in the public consciousness.
They are good at throwing stuff into the zeitgeist. But yeah, very much looking forward to that. I think it's going to be cute and creepy and awesome. I mean, they don't mess that kind of stuff up, really. I mean, everything they do is gorgeous and scary. And, you know.
It'll be interesting to see how they put it together, because Trick or Treat's kind of like four different storylines going on at the same time. And it'll be interesting to see how they weave that into a single haunted house.
They'll probably pick one or two.
No, in the thing, it said four.
It'll follow four?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, cool. Then either you're not going to get enough to understand what the hell's going on, or it's going to just be a big old mush of scariness.
Or it's going to be a really, really big maze, which I'd be fine with.
They haven't, where they put it?
Really done a gigantic maze. It'd have to be on one of the ones in the back lot.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing a longer maze, especially after The Shining. That one felt really short.
Yeah.
Is that coming back this year? Do they have any mazes that come back?
They don't repeat. Like, okay. They very, very rarely repeat. And if they do, it's a couple years later.
Okay. Well, they're busy.
I think the only time they ever repeated in a row was House of 1,000 Corpses.
Why?
Well, they said it was because by popular demand. I say it's because they didn't have money.
They didn't have anything else.
Their budget got cut.
Look, there's a reason that mazes at Knott's last for 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's not because they last for 5 years. It's because they don't want to have to build anything else for 5 years.
Yeah. By the fifth year, those things are being held up by duct tape and gum.
A will and a prayer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, we'll see what happens, huh? Trick or Treat.
Is that the only one that they've announced so far?
No, they've announced other ones.
What else do they have?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's in the past. If you want to know what it is, we talked about a few podcasts back.
Then how come you don't know if we talked about it already?
Hey, man.
Mr. Font of Knowledge.
I have so many spinning plates going on right now. I don't remember what I did 5 hours ago.
So, yeah, what else you got going on?
Well, this is going to be a fun one, and it actually ties into our last segment. So I want to get your thoughts. You love Disneyland, right?
I do.
You like the alcohols, right?
Yeah.
Disneyland has never served alcohol. Besides Club 33, which doesn't really count.
Okay.
However, Florida, the Magic Kingdom, which is Disneyland's baby brother, has announced that they are now serving alcohol at all restaurants.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of alcohol?
I assume beer and wine.
Just the easy stuff?
Yeah, I doubt they would go hard alcohol.
Well, I know that the dads are all going to be very happy.
Yeah. But what's your take on it?
I don't think that alcohol is that sacred. I think that, just like with anything else, it's not the thing. It's how you deal with the thing. Like, there's sugar at every 5 feet in the park. If your child has some weird rambunctious disorder where every time they come across candy, they lose their goddamn mind. Is that the sugar's fault, or is it not the child's fault, but the situation that they're in? I think that offering alcohol is going to do nothing but generate revenue for the park, and it's not going to affect a damn thing. That's my opinion. I think that parents are going to be a little bit more relaxed. I think that, you know, frat boys are going to be a little bit more rowdy, but they're drinking in the parking lot anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I don't care at all.
Well, and the thing is like knots and stuff, they're going to price it at a point where it's like, unless you plan on have like a $2,000 a day budget on beer, you're not going to get
you
drunk.
You really want that beer. I need a Stella so bad right now. These kids are driving me nuts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're not going to be giving you any 10% ABV stuff either.
No,
I mean,
it's going to be Bud Light
or Budweiser, yeah. Coors Miller.
I don't think. Why are people
maybe a Blue Moon or a Shock Top, but yeah, that's about the top end, probably.
As risque as it's going to get.
Yeah.
Is there anybody who's up in arms about having like the devil's spit the theme park?
I think the main thing was Walt Disney was against it. He didn't want to have alcohol in the park because he didn't want it to be like a carnival. And he saw how the parents acted with the kids at the carnival, and he's like, my park's not going to be that way. I'm not going to serve alcohol.
I think that might be a little bit, like, that's not necessarily, like, you're blaming one variable, assuming that that one variable is responsible for an entire, like, outlook on life. You know, like your whole attitude about the carnival is different than your attitude about Disneyland. First of all, you didn't pay $120 to get into the carnival. You know what I mean? Like you really want to be at Disneyland. You suffer through the carnival. You go because your kids want to go and you're like, whatever, I'm going to go get hammered so that this is less miserable for me. And I'm going to let my kids spend $80 on tickets and, you know, go barf their brains out on the Tilt-A-Whirl. Like completely different mentality than I'm going to spend a month's worth of my salary to go to this place that I have spent 6 months planning to visit and, you know, build memories and take pictures and be present and, you know, do all this stuff that you do when you go to the happiest place on earth, especially if you're not from down the street from the happiest place on earth.
Yeah.
I think that you've earned that beer. Go get a drink.
Would you be... Like some people have suggested, maybe there should be like a limit. Like, have you ever been to those? I went to an event. I can't remember what it was, but they did have like a 2-drink max because it was some kind of liability thing.
Basically,
they just put a slash on your hand. So you get one slash and then when you get your second beer, they make the X and then like, you know. Ugh,
why do they have to babysit them?
I don't know.
Why? No.
I say just, yeah. At that point, though, as clubs have found out, if they are drunk and they drive home and crash the car full of kids, guess who's liable? Disney's liable because they sold them the alcohol and let them leave.
How many beers, how many Stellas do you have to pound to be inebriated enough to crash your car when it takes at least an hour to get out of the parking structure
in the first place? You'd be pretty...
I'm not condoning drunk driving in any sense. And I see your point entirely. You have to balance the two. You have to acknowledge that these are grown-ass people. That just because you offer them a thing doesn't mean that they're 100% going to drink all of the thing that you just offered them. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone gets drunk, they could have... say someone goes to Disneyland and they get drunk in Disneyland. Is that any different from them leaving the park and going to Napoli's Pizza, having an entire bottle of wine, and then walking to that same parking structure and driving in their car and getting in an accident?
No.
Does it matter where they bought that alcohol?
Well, they bought it at Napoli's, so then Napoli's is, you know.
But the Disneyland experience provided that alcohol.
Yeah.
So who cares?
And DCA already has alcohol, so whatever.
And DCA is out.
So people are park hopping anyway. They go over to DCA, they get hammered, then they go back to Disneyland. Like, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. So I'm kind of like, I don't care. Like, I think it's actually a better thing that they serve it in both parks here.
Jack up the price and also remove the stigma of the alcohol, and maybe kids won't be clamoring to drink it as soon as they get their hands on it.
Yeah, I've always been that way.
I know we're veering into a different subject with that, but like...
Demystify it.
It's just a drink.
Yeah.
Just let dad have a beer, let mom have a glass of wine, and everyone will be much happier. Trust me. Mom will be smiling in those pictures instead of crying because she's exhausted.
Yeah.
Let mom have the goddamn glass of wine. Anyway, those are my thoughts anyway.
All right. So let's move on to our final segment. Nani watches a video.
Oh, yay. I love this segment.
It's been a while.
It has.
So this one actually has to do with Disneyland.
Okay. Oh, wow. We're kind of on theme here.
I know. We've had some good transitions.
Fantastic.
It's actually a video I wanted you to watch back when we did the stories about the ghost of Disneyland. However,
that was a while back.
Yeah. However, the video disappeared off of YouTube. Like, it got pulled.
Ghosts or something.
Disney lawyers, probably. Anyway, someone has gotten it back up.
Giggity.
And yes, they got it back up. And it's going again. And
oh,
so,
good for him.
And it's part of like kind of a montage of different scary videos.
Is it one of those montages with a really bad voiceover?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I love those so
much. However, I muted it because there's copywritten music on it, and I don't want it on here. So
we're not gonna get
the audio. We're just gonna watch the video. So you're gonna have to explain to the viewers what's going on
okay.
as we watch this video. But it's also on this monitor over here, so you're going to have to kind of look that way.
Okay, so I'm looking up over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to set it up, just for the viewers, this is Disneyland has like a command center for security with cameras and stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. So there's a cell phone video from one of the security officers who's watching all of these cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Haunted Mansion queue line, he sees something, so he puts his camera up to the video screen for the Haunted Mansion queue line. You're going to see what he catches in the video. And then I want you to tell the viewers what you're seeing and what you think it is.
You're not going to Rickroll me, are you?
No.
Okay.
No. It's for really reals.
Oh, okay. So this is, we're looking at a portion of the montage.
This is the pre-show.
The pre-show.
He's doing his crazy bad voiceover right now.
Oh, right.
So he's setting it up, but I did that for you guys.
Thanks, man. All right, so you've muted the audio. So I'm looking at a four-pack of monitors, of different cameras on one monitor that are pointing at the queue line right when you get past the horse-drawn carriage.
Actually, it's before.
No. Oh, I see. It is before. My bad. I'm looking at it from the other way.
See that? Right through the gate.
So it's... really? All right. So I've seen this one before.
Have you?
Yes. I know. This is so exciting. So a series of questions come to mind.
Yeah.
Why is this guy having his cell phone ready? Looking at all these things.
Well, you could tell at the beginning that he pulls it out. So he's not like, has it set up ready to go.
I watched a video once of someone breaking down the science as to why the optical illusion happened.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember what it was. But it would be super helpful right now if I did. But, I mean, it's a really cool illusion. It's... Whatever happened that caught the light the way that it did is really neat. But it is not a ghost.
So you don't think it's a ghost?
No, of course not.
So what do you think it is? Because I had to get something. So what was the camera picking up that made it look like somebody was walking?
It had something to do with a reflection. Like the way there, it was somebody walking, but there's like a piece of glass in between the lens and what the camera is actually recording, and something was walking in a way that reflected against that glass and then bounced into the lens recording. So it's just kind of like a Pepper's Ghost illusion, yeah.
But the camera was picking it up as if it was looking at the queue line and the street when really he was in a different spot. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. But, I mean, I know. I don't have the answers. I don't know. I mean, it looks really cool, but it's not enough for me to be like, oh, that's a ghost. You know, because I don't think that it's a ghost at all.
Well, it was very, very human-like in its movements. Like, it does look like somebody walking.
Yeah, but we really like to assign human traits to things.
And I would assume if I saw a ghost, it would be less like that.
I think, yeah, I mean, if a ghost presented itself,
like, because it looked like it had weight to it, right? Like, you can tell when an object is moving and...
It was moving really smoothly.
You could tell there's, like, physics being in place, and you wouldn't think you'd see that with a ghost.
Yeah. I mean, is there a way to replay it easily, even though it's a clip in the middle of the thing? All right, we're going to play it back and see if we can further try to break it down. So we've got a lot of glare already coming off of all of these lights. See?
The interesting.
Oh, you know what that is? It looks like a flashlight. And you've got the strings, like the light flares on the top and bottom. And you see all you see is a shape. And you've got flares on the top and bottom. Like, I think that's a person walking, but it's not a freaking ghost. It's the reflection of somebody. I think it's a Pepper's ghost.
Yeah.
And I think that the light is shining on the person so that you could see them, and that light bouncing off of them is creating those.
So what it could be is somebody that's working there that has one of those construction vests, like the...
Yeah.
And the light's reflecting off of it.
Yeah, could be.
It's interesting, though, because wherever they are, they're following pretty closely to the other path that they're being reflected on.
They are, but did you notice how he walks through that gate right there?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't walk through the gate. That layer that he is walks over the entire image.
Yeah.
So he walks essentially over that pillar. Mm-hmm. If he was a ghost walking through a fence, the pillar would have been solid and he would have walked behind it.
Yeah.
But he was just like a superimposed image on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it's neat, and I really like those things, and I love these kinds of videos. I watch them all the time. They make me super happy because I'm like, that's so stupid, and it makes me feel smart.
Yeah.
Even though it's just dumb, but yeah.
It's still a fun video.
We need to call this segment the skeptical Nani takes the fun out of every video.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, I guess. Such a party pooper. I try to make up for it.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all I had. Do you have anything going on?
No, man. I guess we can do a quick little Decay Brigade update. We talked about the show, but we officially started practicing and building music and shows and crazy stunts and crazy obstacles and fun things. And
yeah.
That's all you get for now, but fun things are brewing, and it is going to be a mighty fun time.
Especially the fun thing that's sitting on our porch right now. Which I can't tell you what it is.
You're going to see stunts you ain't never seen before. Well, in this application, anyway. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
Definitely don't miss it. Multimedia. I will tell you that. That's new from last year. It's an evolution in our show.
Every year it gets a little more crazy.
Well, yeah.
Which makes my job harder, but.
Yes. But it makes it really great for the audience. Like, every year we kind of figure something out. I mean, like, you get something locked down, and you're like, okay, what new can we do?
Yeah.
And this year that happened in a few different areas, like as far as production, as far as stunts, as far as obstacle construction. Like, we leveled up a lot of different ways. Like, our talent tree grew in every branch.
Yeah.
It's going to be something special.
So this year, instead of trying to lock down one thing, we're locking down five new things.
Kind of. Yeah, because it's even growing in ways that we can't even talk about yet.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. Some fun stuff on the job gig. Casey and I have got a PA gig and modeling gig coming up here soon. I've been doing PA work on a feature film in Hollywood. I'm hoping to get more of those. That's it, really?
Yeah.
That's all the fun stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, got two dogs. They're great. They're hairy. I can't think of anything else that would fit within this. That last one doesn't even really count.
I don't know. They're pretty scary sometimes.
Oh, my God.
All right. So I think that's it for us, huh?
I think that pretty much covers it.
All right. Well, you guys can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Tales from the Fog. You can follow Veronica on Instagram and Twitter at
Veronica Voices.
You can, what else can they do? Oh, follow the YouTube channel on Decade Brigade because I'm occasionally putting stuff on there.
And do we have like an iTunes thing? Like, can people find us on iTunes?
You mean the podcast?
Yeah.
Yes. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn Radio. You can find us on any podcast app you feel like using that uses iTunes as a directory.
Cool. Well, what I wanted to say was thank you to everyone who's been leaving us reviews and rating us because you guys are super awesome. And we kind of like neglected that part. We forget that people rate and review things. And then we found it and we're like, oh, well, that was very nice of you guys.
Yeah. Thank you guys for our 5-star rating. Which is pretty crazy. We sit here and just talk about a bunch of stupid shit and then we get 5 stars. But so, whatever. Yeah,
thanks, you guys.
It's awesome.
So yeah, if you haven't and you feel like it, then it would be an honor for you to do so. The more reviews and ratings we get, the easier it is for people to find our podcast. So if you want to share the love and want other people to hear our insane ramblings on, then you know that's a good way to get it to show up in people's search. So
yeah,
you know. If you feel so inclined, then that'd be super cool.
Yes. And the more people that listen, the more sponsors we can get, which would actually help pay for the amazing amount of money it costs to do something for free for everybody.
I know. That's such a weird thing you don't think about in the early days. You're like, wait, it costs how much to host a podcast? It costs how much for the equipment? Like, you're in the red for a while. I'm like, no one's doing this for the money. I mean,
no.
We're doing it so that we can reach out to people who are, you know, a little off like us and are into the same kind of things as us. But, you know, it's at a point, I guess, it's something to consider. You know, breaking even would be pretty sweet, but, you know, obviously it's not on our list of things to do today. We just want to, you know, reach out and tell you about our lives and, you know, our little world and hopefully share some creepy fun stuff with you guys. So thanks for coming along.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Anything else?
That's it, man.
All right, guys. Until next time, we'll see you in the fog.
Bye guys.
Bye.